You are Locked On MLB, your daily MLB podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans, and welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast where we talk about all of Major League Baseball, and I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully. On today's episode, which is being dropped on the 20th day of April, 2020, I'll be answering a tweet and talking about how strange, unpredictable, and sometimes unfair life can be. And I'll be doing it through the lens of three Marlins. It'll make sense when I'm done. Hey, this show is available on the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app. We're also available at all the platforms where you get your podcasts or on the site, which is LockedOnMLB.com. When you're at home, please stay safe during this whole global pandemic. Tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB or check out some of the other great shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On Fantasy Baseball with Scott Cullen. Great show to get your fantasy team ready whenever this season is going to start. Follow us on Twitter at LockedOnMLB_net. We're also available on Instagram at LockedOnMLB. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram, and I do write back. If you send me tweets, I do write back. If you send me messages on Twitter, you don't believe me? I'm going to do it right now. A person who tweets a lot of really good questions. In fact, I could very easily make this show just be me responding to his tweets. And by the way, the fact that the season may not begin, I may wind up doing that. Hey, Jeff Cohen, how you doing? Now, I have pointed out Jeff Cohen writes tremendous questions here. I'll also point out that he has a New York Met avatar. It's Mr. Met getting ready to take a swing. I will also note that his Twitter handle is at JFC1962200. Now, normally, when a name is followed by eight numbers, my antenna go up because I think to myself, what a wonderful world. And I also think to myself, that could be a Russian bot. When you see name followed by eight numbers, you think, is that a Russian bot? Is that a Russian bot? The answer to that is no. I do not believe Russian Cohen. I don't believe Jeff Cohen. I'm not even going to edit that out. From now on, you're Russian Cohen, Jeff. I do not believe that he is a bot because 1962 and 2000 are not two random years. If you're a Met fan, 1962, of course, the Mets were formed and had the single worst team in modern baseball history. 2000, the Mets won the pennant and lost to the Yankees in the World Series. Was that the last World Series the Mets played in? No, they lost the 2015 World Series to the Kansas City Royals. Could that have been the last pennant they won when Jeff set up his Twitter account? I don't know. Let's find out. When did he join Twitter? Joined 2012. Huh? So that probably was the last pennant when he joined Twitter. So, Jeff, I do not think you are a Russian bot. But in case you are, comrade, da, I speak no Russian. But evidently, Jeff understands me. So even if he is sitting there in St. Petersburg typing away, trying to infiltrate the Locked On Podcast Network through nasty tweets, he did write me something. And here's what he said. Sully Baseball, that's me. One game, one pitcher. Who do you take? Randy Johnson or Greg Maddux? Great question. Great question because I believe that in the era of the 90s, a era of baseball where I watched a ton of baseball and came of age as a man and also just loved watching the game, the two greatest pitchers of that era were Randy Johnson and Greg Maddux. They won multiple Cy Young Awards, and they also dominated. Their peak was spectacular. They both won the Cy Young in 1995. Maddux with the American League Cy Young Award, and Johnson with the National League, with the American League Cy Young Award with Seattle. From 1992, Maddux won won 92, 93, 94, 95, four straight Cy Young Awards for Greg Maddux. For Randy Johnson, he also won four straight Cy Young Awards in the National League from 99 to 2002. Maddux won on Cy Young. No, he didn't. I'm sorry. Those are the four that he won. I thought he won one earlier with the Cubs, but no, that was 92. Randy Johnson won the Cy Young Award as a member of the Mariners in 1995. Maddux could very well have won the Cy Young Award in 1989 when he was the Cubs. I actually had to double-check that. Maddux also was the runner-up for the Cy Young Award in 97, finished third in 2000. Randy Johnson was the runner-up of the Cy Young Award in 93, in 97, and in 2004. You could make a really, really strong argument that 2004, as I meant to say 2004, could have been his best season. It was really up there. So he led the league in ERA+, FIP, WHIP, hits per nine innings, strikeouts, game start. He pitched 245 and two-thirds innings to a 2.60 ERA on a terrible Diamondbacks team. He threw a perfect game that year as well. And I'm not even going to bother telling you what his record is because that is irrelevant. During their peak, these two were the best in the game. And they both had a time where it was they just totally dominated the game. But the reason why I think my comrade Russian Jeff asked to bring this up is because they were so different in their style of pitching. They were absolutely night and day. In that Johnson was this tall, imposing, terrifying figure who could throw the ball 100 some odd miles an hour, was, you know, taller than any baseball player in history. I remember when I would be watching games and my buddy Rich Duncan would be watching the games on my TV with me and Randy Johnson would be pitching and he would say, "It's not fair. It's not fair that they have this guy. They shouldn't be allowed to use him." Meanwhile, Greg Maddux looked like an accountant who won a fantasy camp invitation to Braves fantasy camp. When he was on the mound, you know, he had glasses when he was off the mound. He was not an imposing pitcher. He didn't throw huge, you know, fireballing pitches. You weren't up there thinking you were risking your life. You felt like you were risking your life when you saw Randy Johnson on the mound. But Greg Maddux was outsmarting you. He was outsmarting. He was two paces ahead of you. You thought you were going to get a curveball, you got a changeup. You thought you were going to changeup, you got a fastball. He was messing with people. He wasn't blowing them away. He was making them look dumb. And the sense was he was outsmarting you. Now, of course, that's a very simplistic way of looking at it. Greg Maddux obviously had talent and ability. And Randy Johnson was obviously someone who had intelligence. You can't be someone who wins 300 games. Now, and I'll get to that in a second, but those are about to throw your iPhones into the Pacific Ocean. Hang on what I'm going to say. You can't be at a position where you can do that and not have it all be psychological or all be physical. The reason why I bring up 300 wins, I'm not a fan of the win as a stat. I think it tells you next to nothing. And players can run up a great win total with mediocre performances, and some people can have a losing record despite pitching brilliantly. But one of the reasons why I think 300 wins is still an interesting benchmark is because it shows a certain amount of longevity, that they survived, that they did more than just be flamethrowers. You know, Greg Maddux wound up, how many wins did he wind up getting in the major leagues? He wound up with 355 wins. He pitched over 23 seasons. Randy Johnson pitched for 22 seasons. He won 103 games. Johnson was considered to be way too wild and was a potential product and maybe a head case when he came up through Montreal. In his first few seasons with the Mariners, he had some good years, made an all-star team, but he also walked way too much. It was a sense that, yeah, he throws really fast, but he was way too wild. And then it all clicked in 93 where he became a legit Cy Young contender and became one of the great pitchers of his era. Maddox looked like he didn't have the stuff. He just was, you know, he was an effective pitcher, but, you know, he wasn't going to be great. And next thing you know, he comes up and he dominates with the Cubs, goes to the Braves, dominates with the Braves, bounces around between the Cubs, Dodgers, and Padres towards the end of his career, and finishes his career, actually, as a member of the Dodgers in the postseason, but I digress. And they both had the longevity. They both pitched over 20 seasons in the major leagues, which is, you can't do that unless you have a combination of intelligence and ability. So who am I going with? I got one game to pitch. And I answered the question instinctively without opening up baseballreference.com, the greatest website in the history of the planet Earth, without doing any analysis of their stats, because why? I already know both of them have great stats. And I also know they've also been great. Now, Maddox has more postseason experience than Randy Johnson, to be sure. Now, part of the reason he was with the Braves all those years, Maddox wound up pitching 198 innings in the postseason. That's nearly a full season. That actually is it. He qualified for an ERA title in the postseason. Now, his record was 11-14. I don't really look at records. His ERA was 3.27, which is higher than you'd expect it to be. And Randy Johnson wound up pitching 122 innings, and his ERA was, you know, lifetime in the mid-threes. Again, a little higher than you'd expect. And both of them had some issues in the postseason. Now, the aura of Randy Johnson in the postseason has been that of that invincibility that he had against the Yankees in the 2001 World Series. And he also defeated the Yankees quite handily, thank you very much, in the 1995 Division Series when he was with the Mariners. But here's an interesting thing about Randy Johnson. Randy Johnson had some tough luck in the postseason. He wound up losing the clinching game of the 95 ALCS against the Indians. He lost both of his starts and pitched very badly in the first start against the Orioles in the Division Series in 97. He pitched into the ninth, but let up a lot of runs while pitching for the Diamondbacks. He wound up leaving the bases loaded, and then the bullpen let up an Edgardo Alfonso grand slam against the Mets in 99. He lost both of his starts against the Padres in 98, although you got to hang a little bit of an asterisk next to that because he actually pitched very well. He just went up against Kevin Brown, who was outstanding. And he pitched badly for the Yankees in his two times in the postseason with the Yankees. There are blemishes on the postseason resume. In fact, his one moment of pure dominance was the 2001 NLCS and World Series. But because that happened on such a grand scale, that tends to be what people remember. Now, Greg Maddux got absolutely torched by the Giants in 89. He lost key games to the Phillies in the 93 postseason, to the Indians in the 95 World Series, to the Yankees in the 96 World Series. He had some tough luck in some series, but in some series he pitched badly. He pitched badly in 2000. He pitched badly in 2001 for the Braves. There were a bunch of postseasons where he wet the proverbial bed. So who am I going to go with? My lone answer is Maddox for this reason. Because Johnson could absolutely dominate or he could get absolutely torched and get super wild. When Maddox tended to lose, it tended to be because he had the bad luck of going up against another great starting pitcher, and every once in a while let up the big hit like the Joe Girardi triple in Game 6 of the 1996 World Series. But Maddox seems less volatile than Randy Johnson. So my long-winded answer is these two great pitchers, neither one I think you can go wrong with, even though they both have lost big games. I'm going to go with Maddux solely because he's more predictable. So there's my long-winded answer. Maddux or Johnson, who am I going to go with? Do you know what? I went Maddux because I think it's a safer choice. But do you know what? That's the kind of choice you'd like to have. And the kind of choices you want to have on your menu. Now I'm talking menus. I'm talking food. And you know what? In this time, you're staying at home, you got to get food and you got to get it delivered to you. So this is why I use Postmates. Now look at, in this time that we're going through right now, you got to deal with deliveries. You got to go through trying to get the right foods. And do you know what? Boom. You don't have to leave the house. You use Postmates. And it's not just for burgers and sushi and ribs or whatever it is. They can go and make your life easier by picking up anything you need from Walgreens, from 7-Eleven, and dropping it off outside your door. Just download the Postmates app on iOS or Android, find your favorites, and get anything you want delivered within the hour. And for a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use the code LOCKEDON. That's code LOCKEDON for $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. All right, I want to just bring up a couple of things here. This is a little way to end our show today. I'm bringing up three names that are connected to the Marlins to kind of talk about how unpredictable baseball can be, how unpredictable life can be, and how unfair it can be sometimes. Three names are three people who have had either birthdays today or birthdays recently. Don Mattingly, boom. Henderson Alvarez, yep. Todd Hollinsworth. Henderson Alvarez had his birthday over the weekend, and today is Todd Hollinsworth's birthday and Don Mattingly's birthday. Happy birthday to all three of you. Now, it can be unfair that the pinnacle of someone's career be the winning of a World Series, or the participation in a World Series. Because when I look at someone like Don Mattingly, who had a wonderful career, and for people my age who grew up as Yankee fans, I didn't grow up a Yankee fan, but I know many people who did grow up in the tri-state area and grew up big-time Yankee fans and stayed with the Yankees when the Mets became the cool team in New York during the 80s, Don Mattingly was the face of the Yankees. He was the MVP in 1985. For a period of time there, he was the premier offensive player in the American League, was homegrown, and sort of looked what Yankee fans wanted from their hero. He represented sort of a gritty, big-time batting champion, hitting tons of home runs, all this stuff. And he played hurt. He played hard. Yankee fans loved him. Yankee fans adored him. Now, his World Series record for his decade and a half as a player and many years as a coach, you would think that Don Mattingly would have been someone who had been part of some big-time Yankees World Series teams. The Yankees went to the World Series in 1981. They lost to the Dodgers. That was the final year of Reggie Jackson in a Yankee uniform. In 1982, the very next year, Don Mattingly arrived from AAA. Yankees don't make the playoffs in 82, 83, 84. 85. All these years, no Yankees in the postseason. 86, 87, 88. The prime of Don Mattingly's career is 83 to 89. Not one playoff game is played in the Bronx. Mattingly starts to break down, still plays super hard, but his body is breaking down as the Yankees are falling apart in the late 80s, early 1990s. Obviously, they don't make the postseason. They have losing seasons in 89, 90. 91, 92. They finally get back to their winning ways in 93, but still no postseason. 94, they put together the best Yankee team in a generation, and it looks like Don Mattingly is finally going to get his taste of October glory, which used to be the birthright of Yankee players. But the strike happens. There's no postseason in 1994. He finally gets into the postseason in 1995 as a wild card team with the Yankees, but they lose to Randy Johnson and the aforementioned Seattle Mariners when they were three outs away from winning one of the most dramatic postseason series in baseball history. Mattingly's body is broken down. Calls it a career after 1995. So between his career, 82 to 95, no pennants, no World Series appearances. He leaves after 95. What happens in 96? They win the World Series. His career fit perfectly in between the bookends of Yankee pennants. With him not on the team as either a player or a coach, they win the World Series in 96, 98, 99, 2000. They win the pennant in 2001. They win the pennant in 2003. During that time, Mattingly is not on the team as a player or coach. In 2004, he returns. After they've won all those pennants, he comes back. What happens in 2004? With him as a coach, the Yankees pull off the biggest postseason collapse in a series in baseball history by dropping a 3-0 lead over the Boston Red Sox. And the Yankees don't go to the World Series in 2004, in 2005, in 2006, in 2007. In fact, in that stretch, they only win one postseason series, and that's the series against the Twins in 2004. All the rest of the years, they're knocked out in the division series. He leaves with Joe Torre to go to Los Angeles. What happens after the 2007 season? In 2009, the Yankees win the World Series. Once again, perfectly missing it. He's with the Dodgers all those years. He leaves the Dodgers as the manager after the 2015 playoffs. Dodgers go to the World Series in 2017 and 2018. Wherever he goes, the team gets to the World Series after he leaves. Is that fair? Of course it's not fair. But that's just how it happens. He's had a wonderful career. A wonderful post-playing career. And yet, he has participated in as many World Series as I have. And in case you're wondering, that's zero. And you take a look at someone else, Todd Hollinsworth, whose birthday is today, won the Rookie of the Year with the Dodgers in 1996, but his career never really took off. I mean, he played the major leagues, and he never became the star it looked like he was going to be when he was Rookie of the Year. And he kind of bounced around between the Dodgers and the Rockies, picked up by the Rangers for half a season, played for the Marlins for one season, the Cubs for a season and a half, played with Atlanta for half a year, the Indians for half a year, the Reds for half a year, kind of just bounced around. After his first 5.5 years with the Dodgers, it's tough to nail him down to be associated with any one team. Just kind of bounced around, you know, serviceable, left-handed pinch hitter off the bench. One of those years was the 1 year he played in Florida. And that 1 year they played in Florida, the Marlins just happened to go all the way and win the World Series. So playing 93 games in Miami in 2003, and he came up as a pinch hitter 3 times in the Division Series, 4 times in the League Championship Series, 2x in the World Series. Boom, he gets a World Series ring for playing that 1 year with the Marlins. All those years of loyalty of Mattingly with the Yankees and those years of working hard with the Dodgers and now taking over the Marlins, Mattingly, no appearances, no ring. Hollinsworth bounces around. One of the places he just happens to bounce to, picks himself up a ring. Is that fair? No. But that's just how things happen. That's why sometimes the counting the rings for a player's value is not really the best metric. Todd Hollinsworth has as many World Series rings as Willie Mays. 1-1. But that's what happens. I mean, he was a Rookie of the Year and looked like he was going to have his whole career ahead of him. And he did. I mean, there's nothing wrong with being a career, you know, bench player, pinch hitter, picks up a ring, picks up some time in the major leagues. But it brings us to another Marlin. And that's Henderson Alvarez, who had his birthday over the weekend. Now, Henderson Alvarez, I don't know if you remember him. He was a Toronto Blue Jay prospect. And when the Marlins went on one of their purging of star players. They wound up sending Mark Burley, Jose Reyes, and a bunch of other people from Toronto to the Marlins. And they got a haul of minor leaguers and people like Anthony Discalfani and Jake Marisnik. A bunch of people came over to Miami. And one of them was Henderson Alvarez. And Alvarez was a 24-year-old pitcher in 2014. And it looked like he was starting to bud and be a star. And at age 24, he made the All-Star team. Got a few down-ballot votes in the Cy Young vote. He finished 12th in the Cy Young vote. But, you know, he had a solid year. Led the league in shutouts. Pitched 187 innings to a very good 2.65 ERA in his 30 starts. Struck out 111 batters and walked only 33. And the All-Star finished the 2014 season with a no-hitter. And it was a strange no-hitter. It was on the last day of the season. And going into the ninth, the score was 0-0. So he got his nine innings of no-hit ball, but it was not sure whether he was A, going to get the win, or B, even the complete game. But as it turned out, in that final game of the season against Detroit, a wild pitch was thrown, allowing the winning run to come in. And so he clinched a no-hitter with a wild pitch while being on deck. And with that, he finished the season being a young stud pitcher, fresh off of the All-Star team, finishing the year with a no-hitter, and the world was his oyster. And he was hugged by his teammate, Jose Fernandez. Now, we know Jose Fernandez, who was also a young pitcher and looked like was going to be the stud, and Alvarez would be his number two guy. We know that Jose Fernandez didn't live past the 2016 season, as he was killed in that boating accident. But another strange thing about Alvarez, another pitcher who looked like his entire career was just waiting for him to be a star for years to come, that no-hitter was his last major league victory in 2014 at age 24. Throws a no-hitter to end the season. He never won another game in the major leagues. In 2015, he had an injury-plagued season, pitched four games for the Marlins, pitched poorly, and then found himself bouncing around between Nashville and Stockton and the A's organization. He pitched three games with the Phillies in 2017, didn't pitch particularly well, bounced around to Lehigh Valley, pitched in the independent Long Island, pitched in the Mexican League, in the Venezuelan League, and last year tried to make another comeback, but pitched poorly for Fresno and pitched in the Mexican League. He's not yet 30. He's not a 30-year-old man yet. Well, actually, he is now. He turned 30 over the weekend. And that no-hitter was his swan song in terms of major league victories as a 24-year-old. Does it make sense? No, it doesn't. It doesn't make sense that he has to look and say, was that my last win? And it doesn't make any more sense than Mattingly still looking at him. Am I ever going to appear in a World Series? And both of them looking over at Todd Hollinsworth and saying, hey, can I see your ring? Baseball doesn't always make sense. And three Marlins illustrate that extraordinarily well. The three Marlins who had their birthdays over the last few days. So with that, we can say baseball is not fair. But do we watch baseball to be fair? Or do we watch it because it doesn't make sense? I would argue that it's the latter. And I will also tell you that we're available on the free and easy-to-use Himalaya podcasting app. We're also available wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to write me a tweet like my Russian friend Jeff, send me it at Sully Baseball. And check out some of the other great shows on the Lockdown Podcast Network, where it's your team every day, including Lockdown Fantasy Baseball with Scott Cullen. This has been Lockdown MLB for the 20th day of April, 2020. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.